You think a wall as solid as the earth separates civilization from barbarism? I tell you, the division is a thread, a sheet of glass. A touch here, a push there, and you bring back the reign of Saturn. John Buchan. Welcome to this week's episode of Warfare, Advancement, and Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I am your host. I'd like to thank you all for joining me this week. I appreciate the support. If you're a newcomer, welcome. I hope you will enjoy. Then go back and listen to old episodes, and of course, continue listening into the future. And to all my returning listeners, thank you all so much. As always, I really appreciate you guys too. This week, we will be finishing up our coverage for Maragar this season, where we will cover the first 800 years of Phase 2 at the site, which is a little over half of this phase's existence. We will also talk about other emerging sites and material cultures, or potential material cultures, that are beginning to make their impact on this region and neighboring ones, close to or neighboring the Indus Valley, or the Indus River Valley. That is, if we have the time. Basically, I'm going to cover Phase 3 of Maragar, see what we're doing on time, and then we may continue, or we may just hold off and wait for those other cultures for next week. So expect us maybe going back and forth a little if that happens in terms of timeline. But we'll just have to wait and see. I also had a couple of questions about the site's layout that thankfully I plan to answer as best as I can this week. And to those two new listeners, or to those two listeners who emailed me, thank you, and I hope you enjoyed the sneak preview in the email reply. Now, along those lines, there were two other items I want to go over in regards to what we covered last week. Now, one of these was an intentional omission because it basically gave me more to talk about this week in relation to Phase 3, which sadly doesn't have too much to distinguish it from Phase 2 materially until the very end of this season. Some of its more radical changes happen next season. There is one piece of technology that I omitted by mistake, and I forgot to mention that it was something that developed along with their terracotta figures. And that is that they were also producing button seals, which, as the name may suggest, were smaller circular discs similar to buttons, though typically they are much thicker. And they were used to impress patterns upon clay. And they were probably used to record what and how much something was stored in and where. Or they were used to denote how much someone was allowed to take from a shared store or something along those lines. They're kind of this part of the world's answer to the cylinder seals or stamp seals. They serve the same purpose. They're just slightly different in terms of their configuration. Now, the intentional omission was about the site's pottery, and I'll return to this topic shortly. But I first wanted to go over kind of Maragar's Phase 3, kind of the general overview for what we see this season and kind of their layout. So, production methods that appeared during Phase 2 remain. That doesn't really change, and typically speaking, they become more refined or that they're just able to produce more even if the quality of the goods remains the same. They're just producing more of it. And the site's population also grows. One of the things that tips us off about this is the usage size of the site, in which case it seems that it grows maybe double in size or almost double. The whole site of Maragar inhabits around 2 square kilometers, which is like 200 hectares. However, as you may imagine, a site in use for as long as Maragar was, It went through a lot of changes, and we've already gone over several of those, but that includes changes in layouts. Early buildings made of mud, or mud brick in this case, eventually get to a point where they can't be repaired. So they're either torn down or left alone and empty to collapse. And then eventually, you know, once that happens, they would kind of level it out as best they could, but then they would just kind of leave it and let wind and all that kind of stuff carry dust away or dust onto it to help even it out some. And we've covered this before. This buildup of earth and debris is what leads to tells. And, you know, we've already talked about many of them. Marigar itself actually has 6 of these hills, all fairly close to one another. Again, within 2 square kilometers. And different ones were used at different times, and others were completely abandoned for various periods. Now, Phase 3 saw 4 of these hills being used at once. And use in this case means they had buildings there, they were using it to bury their dead, they were using it to basically as garbage pits or piles. And the other mounds in places outside the tell cluster were in use for agriculture, pasturage, hunting, gathering, etc. So this means that the total area under urban-esque use was about 1 square kilometer, so about half of the site's total size. And I couldn't get an exact number on this, but Phase 2 was maybe about half this size, and then Phase 1 was... this is very rough math on my part, but it was maybe a quarter at most. And this expansion between Phase 2 and 3 happened very gradually, with the site slowly expanding out, and it integrated a few scattered homes kind of on the periphery of what had been the earlier tells. And, you know, this, of course, was done probably for... probably because it was easier to live there, but also it may have been as an attempt to kind of get more labor for either agriculture and or maybe their production methods for things like their terracotta figures, but also their pottery, which brings me back to what I wanted to talk about for this episode, kind of the defining features of Phase 2 and Phase 3 Marigar, which is the arrival of and the expansion of pottery at the site. Now, as we may remember, Marigar at the start was an aceramic site. It had no pottery. Pottery does show up during Phase 2. And this is one of those things that's very heavily debated. There are those that claim, well, the pottery all looks very similar to what we saw in Eastern Iran, Central Asia, so they're probably just trading for it. However, there are those that contend, well, no, it's just kind of simple. It's just that's what all early pottery looks like, or at least close enough. Obviously, there are always variations, you know. Sizes, shapes are all different, there's a very heavy argument that no, they were creating their own pottery. I think that they did create their own pottery very early on. Whether they invented it or not, that I can't say. I don't have a strong opinion on that. But even if they were trading for it, they very quickly learned how to create it on their own. And one of the things that you see towards the end of Phase 2, or maybe at the very start of Phase 3, which, just a reminder on the time frame here, Phase 3 is 4,800 to 3,500 BCE, that they are making kilns. And these are updraft kilns. They're also making pit kilns, too, so they have a couple different kinds. I imagine that some kilns are useful for making some things, and others are useful for making the other items. What these are specifically, I can't say. I'm not a potter, unfortunately. So there's a little bit of mystery on that on my part. But another thing that shows up towards this period is potter's wheels. These are very simple wheels. These are not large kick wheels. These are very similar to what I talked about that emerged at the start of this season back towards the Middle East and Levant. Now, did they invent this or did they import it from, you know, as this technology was spreading across the Near East? I don't know. Again, these very early pottery wheels are very simplistic. They shouldn't take too much ingenuity to create, especially if you are used to working with stones and items like that to create pottery. So it's very possible it could have been invented independently. It's possible it could have spread. In the long run, it doesn't really matter. But this is something that shows up heavily during Phase 3. Though, again, it's possible it could have arrived earlier during Phase 2. And like I mentioned last week, the pottery is, again, it's simple at first, but it does get more decorative and things like that. However, Phase 3, it really enters its own, and it definitely becomes unique. There's a lot of very intricate patterns, mostly lines, although there are some naturalistic scenes, things like plants or animals are depicted on them. But yeah, so painting pottery becomes much more ubiquitous and an independent art style. Whether or not they invented pottery independently, by this point, this is their version of pottery. However, this is not the only type of ceramics to appear at Marigar. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but there are other sites nearby that are beginning to emerge and get on that path to urbanization. Though, as we'll talk about, not all of these will become true urban centers. But again, that is for future. However, towards the end of Phase 3, or at least this season, so towards 4,200, 4,000 BC, somewhere in that range, copper begins to show up at Marigar. And this is the entry into the Chalcolithic phase, the Copper Age. And much like those other sites, the use of copper very early on is almost entirely of beads and jewelry. It's not true metallurgy just yet. Although, one thing that does show up here in this phase, though, again, I don't think it's this season, are crucibles, which is used for melting copper and later other metals. But so this is kind of the big part of Phase 3. This is the entry of this part of the world into the Copper Age. But again, probably not happening till the very, very end of this season. Now, there are copper deposits in the Indian subcontinent. There are some at, it's actually fairly well spread over India. India, the country, not the subcontinent. But there are some in the north, there's some in the central part, and there's some in the east. I don't think there's any copper in southern India. They have other metals and minerals and things like that. I think they have a significant portion of chromite in southern India, which is something, you know, much more important later. But there are other metals spread throughout the subcontinent, and Pakistan has copper deposits too. In fact, they it's widespread, but they don't have a huge amount. I think they have about 2% in India itself, just the country of modern India. I think they have about 2% of the world's copper. But they actually do have a very large industry around copper. So they basically, they punch above their weight. They produce more copper products than I think they're like top 20 in the world, despite them having a relatively small portion of the world's copper. And I think that's true of Pakistan as well. though they produce more raw copper total. And there's some not far from where Marigar is in the grand scheme of things. I know there's like a big modern mine at Recodic, I believe is how it's pronounced. There are also some in, I think, northern Pakistan, right near the Afghan border. And of course, there are copper deposits in Central Asia. And it's not outside the possibility that they were trading copper from these faraway places, as well as obtaining it locally. So just keep that in mind. Just because you have something close at hand doesn't mean that you won't also import it from further afield, especially if people in those places aren't utilizing it or don't have the capability or the desire to produce the more, what's a good term for this, finished products of said resource. But this is all stuff that, of course, is going to develop over time. So the advancement of the copper age at Marigar, that is kind of where we leave off. There will be other important advancements at Marigar. Marigar still has a very long history ahead of it. Next season will return. It will be phase 4, 5, and 6 next season, believe it or not. The advancements at Marigar just begin to steamroll, kind of. Eventually, we'll get to the decline as well, sadly. In fact, I want to go ahead and let everyone know, because I finally decided next season is going to be between 3000 and 2000 BC. So we're shortening from 2000-year stretches to about 1000-year stretches. But that's still a lot. In fact, we're going to be going over this at later dates, but I'm kind of going to change how seasons work. It's going to be maybe parts is a better idea, and then each part will have sub-seasons. But that's stuff that we'll go over a little bit more later. For now, though, let's turn to some of the other sites that are beginning to emerge kind of neighboring to Marigar. And this is going to allow us to focus on two regions specifically. These are Baluchistan, which is the modern name for the region, and the Indus River Valley itself. Now, the two material cultures that we're going to be talking about is Kiligul Muhammad, and the other one is the Tugao. Now, one of the sources I've been using for this, probably one of the bigger ones, is Pre-Indus and Early Indus Cultures of Pakistan and India by J.G. Schaefer and B.K. Thapar. Now, most of their stuff is actually covering later seasons, but there is some kind of mention of this time frame. Unfortunately, a lot of the earlier, archaeology for this season is kind of shrouded and it's up for debate, sadly. So, at least in English, I think there's a little bit more in some of the local languages and in French. Unfortunately, my knowledge of those local languages is very limited and my French is not very good at all. So, I've translated what I can when I can, but mostly I'm using English sources to kind of go off of some of this. So just keep in mind that this is not necessarily going to be the strongest reading of this that you could do, but it's probably as good as you can do if you just speak English. So apologies for that. Also keep in mind that this is not an overarching civilization. Again, these are material cultures, and just because one site shares, you know, some material with one of the others, doesn't mean that they are all that related. They could just be using, again, the same tools, or those tools were considered prestigious or something along those lines, or, you know, pottery, things like that. The names come from the type sites, and those type sites may not be the largest or the origin points of those material cultures. That's just the name that archaeologists give them. Kiligul Muhammad is just north of the modern city of Quetta in Pakistan. And Also, some of these sites are in the Hindu Kush on the Afghan side as well. So they may not technically be in the Indian subcontinent. They're right on the borderlands, but just keep that in mind as well. Now, Baluchistan is a very mountainous region, and it has northeast mountains and southwest mountain ranges, but it's separated by a very narrow valley with some perennial rivers, but mostly it gets its water from rains coming in the summer and winter, sometimes snows. So just keep that in mind. It's a fairly dry region compared to other parts of, well, especially compared to the Indus Valley, and that's something we'll go over. But at this time period, there may be seeing more rain. It may be more fertile, but this is just something you'll sometimes see in the region. Also, monsoons will cause rain to be more abundant than at other periods, especially if the monsoons fail. You might not see as much fertility, and that can be a problem. You know, if that happens, you know, a couple of years in a row, it can really hurt Baluchistan's agricultural output. Now, the Kili-Gul Muhammad cultural tradition or material tradition is very similar to Marigar. You have peoples living close to or in the hills, and they will have very small agricultural villages. And this starts, the start point is debated, but the earliest date I've seen is like 5,500. The latest is as late as 4,000. So take that as you will. Most of their tools are stone, and they have a wide variety of stone to choose from because of the mountains they're nearby. They use ground stone. They make axes, adzes, and things like that. A lot of the same material that Marigar is using is they'll use seashells, a lapis turquoise, a carnelian. They use alabaster too. Their homes are either mud, brick, stone. In some cases, they're a combination of all three depending on where they're living. But again, most of the settled agricultural sites are fairly small. So there's a very high reliance on sheep, goats, cattle, probably water buffalo too, as well as the Indian cow, the zebu, or at least proto-zebu. There's a question whether or not the zebu were fully domesticated at this earlier period, but that's one thing we've talked about before. A lot of these Kili-Gul Muhammad sites are also ceramic from the start. They have pottery very early in their lifetimes, and they make a lot of it very quickly. This is one of those places where the potter's wheel may have been invented independently, or it could have come into the region very early, but they make very good use of it, and they produce. Like Marigar became like a regional production center, it's very possible that some of these sites were similar to Marigar, that they're producing items for export or for trade, not export like we would think today. But unfortunately, due to the nature of the region, it's kind of hard to say how much was actually produced there for use and how much was used for just out-and-out trade. Now, due to the size of the villages, it's unlikely that they had a large population. What's probably happening is that they have, you know, people that are living at the sites year-round, but then they probably also had like extended family or kin groups that were living a more nomadic or pastoral life, and probably smaller kind of villages along their outskirts. And then, you know, at various times of the year, one or two of the neighboring communities would come together, reestablish ties or bonds and all that kind of stuff, and then, you know, they would separate again. But there are a large number of sites kind of associated with the Kili Ghul Muhammad culture. I think they've found over 30 that have been identified. Kili Ghul Muhammad itself, as I said, is kind of to the north of the modern city of Quetta. It is actually not far from the starts of two rivers, the Nal and the Jab rivers. Now, the Nal runs kind of south into the Indian Ocean. I think it's in Urdu, Nal translates to something like umbilical cord, whereas Jab is something like, it's rough to translate into English, but I think they said it's kind of like the oozing or the slow river. But that river kind of flows north and east, down a separate mountain slope. So Kili Ghul Muhammad, fairly well situated, and that's probably why it grew to a decent size, at least for, you know, where it's located. Certainly that's one of the strengths of the modern city of Quetta. Now, there are, again, like I said, over 30 sites that are at one point or another associated with, you know, the Kili Ghul Muhammad phases, though, again, that has its own phase numbers, at same way as Miragar does. Apologies for the cut there. I was waiting for the emergency trucks to go by. And some of these sites have closer links to Kili Ghul Muhammad phases than others, and at different periods, there might be no overlap. Sometimes sites are abandoned for periods, and then they come back, and they're aligned with another place. So just keep that in mind. But some of the other sites that are linked with Kili Ghul Muhammad at various phases, there's some, as I said, in Afghanistan. There's Mundigak and Said Kala, which are to the west of modern Kandahar. Then you have Tharo and Balakot that are to the north, west of modern-day Karachi. You have Aladino, which is to the east of modern Karachi. And then you even have some sites kind of near what will be Indus Valley locations, or that are in the Indus Valley, but will be, you know, closer to what we will call the Indus Valley civilization, like Jalalpur and Harappa itself, though that's a separate Harappa from what we'll see later. But this is all stuff that we'll cover, you know, at different periods. So that's kind of, in general, Kili Ghul Muhammad for this period, that culture. Again, a lot of different stonework, but they are very flexible in kind of how their houses and things like that are constructed. They may make the same type of tools. They may have very similar looks and designs, but they are all using local material, more or less, to create these various configurations of tools and artifacts. But their pottery is, again, all of these sites are using pottery from the outset, and they are, relative to their size, they're producing a decent amount of it. Now, we're going to go ahead and move to the Tagal culture. Now, this is also a Baluchistan-associated culture. It is more of a pottery style, at least in my reading. That could be wrong, but it seems like it's linked with a specific type of pottery style. Now, the dates on it, again, are debated. I think the earliest I've seen it mentioned is contemporary with Miragar III, so about 4,500, 4,800, somewhere in that range. But it doesn't appear to really have spread until basically we're into next season's period. So keep that in mind. And it appears also to be mainly focused on pottery, not so much with other tools. So it's kind of like a regional variation or offshoot of one of the probably one of the Kiligul Muhammad phases, I think 2 or 3. And it kind of developed its own path from there. Now, there are sites that, again, will share similarities more with the Tagal ware versus the Kiligul Muhammad ware. And this is kind of going to lead into one of the differences between the Baluchistan material cultures and the Indus River Valley cultures, which we'll get into, I think, next week. Or at least we'll talk about them maybe in the round. I don't know that I'll have too much specific to go over. But essentially, what's happening is you see a couple of sites that develop a specific type of shared tools or pottery or both or a mix of various traditions. In Baluchistan and in the hill countries, you continue to see this variation and regionalization. And these different traditions continue to develop. You know, they're connected to each other, but they all have their own specific styles. And you see that in the Indus Valley, too. However, one big difference is eventually the Indus Valley, the various Indus Valley sites will, while they develop, you know, their own regional traditions and stuff, eventually they kind of unify into a shared material culture. That's not to say that they're all 100% identical, but they are very, very similar. And that's going to give rise to what is known as the Indus Valley Civilization. The Harappan Civilization is another term for it. And that's kind of something that's going to be very important next season when we go into this region then. I just realized I made a mistake saying something earlier, but we'll get back to that. So next week we'll kind of talk about some of the sites around the Indus River Valley, and we'll kind of go over what's a little bit different from that and the Baluchistan sites. So I hope you look forward to that. I hope you'll join me next week. If you have any questions, comments, constructive criticism, please let me know. You can reach me via email at waragrevpod@gmail.com. You can contact me via direct message on Twitter. You can, comment on the YouTube videos. You can come by while I'm streaming on YouTube and say hi in the chat. I always appreciate that. We're over 210 subscribers on YouTube. And so I hope you all will join me next week. And I should have, when I said my dates for next season, it's going to be 1,000 years, but it's going to be 4,000 to 3,000. I got my timelines mixed up, but at least that's the plan for right now. I might change that again, we'll see, but I am going to be doing things a little bit differently in terms of seasons, not because I think there's anything wrong with what I'm doing now, but I think things are going to become much more complicated going forward. There's a lot more to talk about. So there will be parts and different seasons in all those parts going forward. But that's something that we'll cover a little bit more in depth later. But So once again, thank you all for joining me. I hope you've enjoyed. And I hope you will return next time. And I hope you have a good rest of your day and week from whenever you're listening to this. I'll see you all next time.